You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
I'm part of a sisterhood like no other. A piece of a puzzle I can barely comprehend. My life is someone else's experiment. My name is Cassima Niehaus.
It's Rachel Duncan.
Alex Gallagher.
Heather French.
Sarah Manning. And I'm one of a kind.
Hi, and welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks. This is our Orphan Black Clone Club edition. My name is Heather, and I'm joined by my podcasting partner in crime, Alex. Hello, Alex.
Hello, everybody.
We're here to talk about Orphan Black Season 3, Episode 3, Formalized, Complex, and Costly. Again, we're coming from Eisenhower's farewell speech, and it comes from this part of the speech. Akin to and largely responsible for the sweeping changes in our industrial military posture has been the technological revolution during recent decades. In this revolution, research has become central. It also becomes more formalized, complex, and costly. A steadily increasing share is conducted for, by, or at the direction of the federal government. Or as we're calling it, the one without Scotland Yard.
Which is so much better and doesn't come with the long and boring quote. Seriously, people.
Hey.
Do you name those episodes to, I don't know, give me pain? Who cares?
That was our 30-something president. I can't remember which one Eisenhower was. And I actually like looking at them because it does kind of tell me where the episode is going, because it's really starting with the industrial military posturing and the technology coming into it. And I can see those points. I actually see it more so far this season than I did in last season, trying to figure out where they got that quote from, why they chose that quote as the title. I'm not saying I like the title. I like ours better, even though we really did have a hard time in this one coming up with the title, because
yeah,
there were no mangoes. I guess it could have been, again, the one without the mangoes, because there were no mangoes still. Let's go ahead and get into this and start right off with our bullet points to give you a quick recap of what happened before Alex and I start going mishmash throughout the entire episode, following absolutely no discernible line of logic whatsoever.
One day, I'll kill you all.
Nita and Castor are both on the hunt for the original clone DNA. On the lam, Mark and Gracie pursue new leads to find samples that might set them free, while Art and Sarah reunite to track them down. Meanwhile, Cassima and Scott try to learn more about Castor's biology, and Allison's new money-making venture is going gangbusters. A shocking revelation about the Castor-Lita connection leaves the sisters reeling just before Sarah witnesses a deadly Prolethean Castor face-off. Dun-dun-dun.
Dum-dum-dum.
I have to admit, I wasn't expecting it to end the way it ended. Not the revelation, but literally those last few seconds, which we'll get to here pretty quick.
Yeah.
I really was not expecting it. Remember how, like, in the first season that we podcast, which was actually season 2, we were like keeping track of, okay, how many clones do we have, and that was the season, the one with, well, maybe this is the one, yeah, without season, because we're losing clones
yeah,
as it goes along. So this is not a good season for clone population at all.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. Then again, I do enjoy the fact that right now the only clones that appear to be dying are the guys, which is refreshing, you know, and good, because I'm way too emotionally invested in our female clones.
Yeah.
So as much as I like Ari, and what he's doing with his clones, yeah, I'm way more invested in getting more Tatiana on screen. So. Yeah.
I will say, I'm definitely want to give props to Ari, because he is making these clones that I think are actually much more what we consider clones you know, when they really are more carbon copies of each other, they're thinking and acting more like, I mean, that when you say clone, that's kind of what you think.
Yeah.
But he's still giving them enough individualness that we're not just calling him the creepy Prolethean clone, even though, you know, that still applies to him. It's not just the creepy army clone and the creepy this clone and the creep. It's, he's giving them enough of a definition personality wise that I can see the differences. And
it's he's no doing longer a good job. Episode one where we talked about this unidentifiable mass of clones that we got in episode one. Now we actually can tell the creepy Prolethean guy, which apparently is called Mark, and Rudy, and Seth, and what's his face, army guy, Miller, something like that. I don't care.
Yeah.
But the army guy.
Yeah, we haven't seen much of Soldier Guy yet, but I have a feeling we'll be seeing more. Just an idea. As these clones are being culled, the first clone that we have that we lost, we actually lost at the end of the last episode, and we start this episode with the aftermath of Seth's murder. I mean, it was murder. It might have been out of mercy on Rudy's part, but it was still murder.
Holy doodle, here we go.
3, 2, 1.
I love Fee and Sarah having to deal with this body and doing exactly what I would do. Okay, well, we've got him out of the stairwell and all this. I need a drink. I adore Fee.
Do you want a drink?
Yeah.
But that's exactly when I was watching it, I was thinking, yep, that is exactly what an average Joe would do. And they might be dealing with clones and, you know, conspiracies and pretty life and death situations, but I'm pretty sure that this is their first body that they had to actively, you know, deal with.
Well, both, yeah. Sarah did have to deal with Katya.
Here we have this body that's right outside their doors. They have to do something, so clearly the first thing you would do, you dump it in a bathtub.
Yeah.
Because that's what you do. You hide it, and then... well, get drunk and think what you do next.
And then you get a drink. But
which is
unfortunately, but unfortunately for them, there is a pounding at the door, not even a knock. And we have Art coming to the door, pounding his way in, Felix unsuccessfully trying to keep him out. And Fee didn't have a lot in this episode, but what he has, what Jordan really brings to this, he really does make the most of. I love it when he goes, first off, it wasn't us. Art, he's not a stupid cop. I love this. I love that in some of the shows that we're talking about, notice I said, the cops aren't stupid. And he gets it. It's not paint. I don't care that he's a painter. And he goes and finds this out. And he doesn't instantly freak out. He just knows that this is a little... normal for the Clone Club, but not normal for what he needs to deal with, and he's really straddling that line now. You know, it's a dead body, not a bag of weed. Although Felix does get the idea, hey, let's burn both. Woohoo, have a little fun.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. I liked how he is, by that time, he's kind of, you know, the way I saw it, at least, kind of resigned. Well,
yeah.
This is my life. You know, this is your life. These are your choices. And yep, this is my life now.
Yeah.
Clones and dead bodies in bathtubs and more clones on the laptop.
Yeah. Yeah, this is my new reality.
I should have become a doctor like my mother wanted.
You know, 2 years ago, Art probably sees the dead body, instantly would have been calling for backup and, you know, all of this. And what does he do? He sits down on the sofa and he gets to meet his next clone, gets to meet Cosima. Welcome to Clone Club.
Hi, Art. I'm Cosima. Welcome to Clone Club. I know, sorry. I knew Beth. I knew what she was going through. We really miss her.
Yeah, me too.
So he is, which I love the fact that he knew, but now he knows. Art is actually in Clone Club. He is, after two seasons, really. He's got the password. He's in.
Yeah.
There's going to be no more of those secrets with him. But still,
you know, one would think he would be welcomed to Clone Club, so to speak, after he met Helena. Which, apparently, nope. It takes more clones for you to become a member of the Clone Club. And the next point is to get a blue phone, because that's important.
Yeah, Fee, get on it. Get him his blue as the sky of Lesbos iPhone, because he needs to be in the connection. I really liked, it was only small, it was very small, but I liked that moment over the internet when Cosima empathizes with Art and says how, you know, we miss Beth. I miss Beth. You know, and ties into that, because that really was Art's connection to everything. And this is a case where Cosima knew all about Art, but Art knew nothing about Cosima. And that was a nice little connection.
I liked the, in a way, it was a callback to when Beth was alive and forming the Clone Club, because she was basically one of the founding members.
Right.
The Scooby Gang that made the Clone Club. Before even Sarah showed up. So I liked that little callback. I liked that even though she's been dead for, well, 2.5 seasons now, almost.
Well, more. Opening seconds of the first episode, so.
It's basically, you know, she's gone but not forgotten. And that bodes well for other clones that passed away, basically.
Right.
We might get a mention of Katya. We might get a mention of Jennifer. We might get a mention of Seth somewhere along the line.
Right. Yeah, because Art really is in Clone Club. I mean, not only has he met them all, he's seen the other clones with Seth's body, and he's really invested in it. And the thing I think I really like is, one of the many things, is that you have Cosima reaching out to Art. You have Sarah. You know, you're back on the force now. Don't risk this. Don't get involved. You know, like, she's looking out for him. We don't want you to compromise your life. And so it's not that Art has gotten pulled into Clone Club. He's voluntarily being a part. He is showing that he really is there for the sisters. It's not because he's being blackmailed into it or has to. I like when I see, and this has happened with Donnie too, when Donnie got pulled into Clone Club, that it was really their choice. I mean, it initially wasn't Donnie's choice, but it became Donnie's choice. And I like seeing that it's not people being forced to do things, that they're there. He really cares about Sarah and really wants to be there for them.
And it works, this episode, because I feel like I was emotionally invested in what they were doing this episode, basically. Mm-hmm. Something that I didn't really connect with in last season, when Sarah was doing the investigation stuff and Art was doing his thing, and sometimes they had connections and interactions. But this time, this episode, I really truly connected and cared what was going on screen with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because somehow, maybe it was because I missed seeing Art over such a long time for him to have a significant plot line. And, or maybe because, you know, I don't know, but I really cared and I was paying attention and not, say, playing Candy Crush and waiting for the scenes that really interest me, which I am also known to do. Yes, but not this time. Not this time.
I think the difference really also was that before Art was this character that they had to deal with, we've now seen into Art a little bit. And when he's driving with Sarah and she's just kind of, she's kind of doing the Cliff Notes version of police work. And he's like, no, you read the file. You know, this is how it works. And when he said, we've got to find the KA, and she's like, known associate. I love the little smile that he did. It's like, okay, She's learning. She's getting schooled on the ways of police. And that little moment opens up him to be able to open up to Sarah about Beth, and that he should have seen that she was trying to tell him that he should have known that how close he was to Beth. And you start seeing that in there. And we find out later on in the episode, it's because of his feelings for Beth.
Beth called you that night. Not Cosima. Not Allison. What is it you're not telling me? Just say it.
I've never said it.
You're in love with her.
She was my partner. We were never going to be together, but it happened.
And I thought it was a really jumping more to the end with Sarah and Beth. I thought it was interesting that Sarah realized, you know, she didn't call Cosima. She didn't call Allison. When she was in trouble there, when things were getting to her, she didn't call the clones that knew everything. She tried to call Art. She called Art and reached out to him. And it's because he was in love with her, even though they couldn't be together. And I went, aw, Art.
That was the part that really kicked me in the feels. And that doesn't happen all that often. But it kicked me in the feels and really had a huge impact on me, that quote-unquote revelation that he was in love with her. And it wasn't because, oh, romance, cute, you know, gave me fanfic. I liked how it was presented to me as a viewer. I cannot even begin to tell you how much more emotionally invested I am in Art now that I mm-hmm. know that he was in love with Beth, but had absolutely no expectations of his feelings going anywhere.
Right.
It is such a rare thing on television or in any kind of media that we consume on a daily basis, television, movies, books, any kind of storytelling. It's such a rare thing to have a character, especially a male character, to have feelings for someone. And for it to go nowhere. And for that character to be perfectly aware that this is not going anywhere. And I don't expect anything. I don't want anything. I'm in love with her. And I'm going to do everything I can to help her, to support her, to be there for her. But mm-hmm. I don't expect to get anything in return. It's such a rare thing, at least in what I can see on screen and in the books that I read, that it really kicked me in the feels so much more than it would if, you know, we learned that later on that Beth also had a thing for him, which will, by the way, destroy everything. So please, writers, do not do this, because it will cheapen the whole thing we got this episode. But yes, now I'm more invested in Art, and I want him to be happy, and I want to hug him and make everything better for him.
I don't know that they would make myself. It where she was also in love with him. I think she did love him, but and I
he
hate
was,
to say
he was
this
her
way,
partner.
In not in that way, which isn't because of him or because of her. I think it would have been because of the situation. Once she finds out she's a clone and she's into all of this stuff and the illnesses and stuff, and not having, I hate to say, not having the brain to hold, you know, be able to really grasp it all. I think Sarah's probably one of the most well-adjusted in taking in yeah. all of this crap. I don't think Beth was. I think she just got to a point where it was just too much. I think because of all of that, even if she was in love with Art, nothing would have ever happened because the whole, what her existence is, would have taken over first. I do think she loved him, but not necessarily in a romantic way. In a, I trust him with my life kind of a way. And if I could let him in on all this other stuff that's going on in my life, I would. But I think she was keeping him safe by not letting him in and not sharing. And yeah, the tragedy of that, because I have to say one of my favorite storylines is always that love that can't be. This true love that really just, for whatever reason, can't be. And it can be played so poorly. It can be overacted. It can be melodramatic. When you get it right, you don't need big long scenes. You just need those moments. And it, like you said, it really does solidify that character and make you love him. Kevin Hanchard did a wonderful job because I could feel his pain in his love for Beth and losing her, not realizing that he lost her until well into the series. You know? Yeah. And how, when you think back on how he did find out about it really being Sarah and why he was acting even the way he did, not that Kevin knew this in season one, but the why he was acting the way he was with Beth, Sarah Beth, you know, that why he was so angry that she wasn't taking some of that Angie Chen stuff seriously or what was going on and why he was, I think, a little like deer in headlights stunned kind of thing during like all the Helena stuff, because it's just like, I'm just riding this wave right now. I don't understand it. I'm just riding it. I think he's come to that point now where he understands everything and that emotion does hit him and the loss of Beth hits him. So kudos to you, Kevin. I really was impressed.
But still on the point of Art, realizing and, you know, comprehending what's going on right now, I do feel that unlike in season two, he will be able to contribute so much more now that he actually, you know, grasps the whole picture, basically, that he will be able to contribute and actually help and not just be a babysitter to an assassin clone. And that is huge because this will allow the character and the actor to do so much more. And that gets me excited.
Exactly.
Because we always loved Art. But now he's getting more material. Just like Donnie last season. Now it's Art's turn. And yes.
Yeah, each one of the guys is really getting that chance to make their mark on the show and in the clones. I love the play between Art and Sarah in this episode because they're not partners, but they are partners. They realize, like, Sarah's like, I'm not your partner. I'm not Beth. He's like, yeah, I know that, but you are my partner.
Seriously, why are you doing this?
I don't know. Because I'm riding with my partner?
Art.
Look, I'm not confused, Sarah.
But you are Beth's sister. Through and through.
Didn't even know her. This isn't your fight.
Yeah, she tried to tell me what she was. She called me the night that she...
The night she came along.
I thought it was the pills, more bullshit. Jumping back on her when she needed me the most.
You couldn't have known.
Yeah, but I should have.
She was lucky to have you.
You know, you're my clone club partner, and they act that way. They perform that way. Like when they were sitting there trying to, in the diner, going through the list of all the different hotels as they're trying to find it, when they're talking to the midwife. I loved when they went to the midwife and, you know, Sarah learns that Helena is pregnant by the Johansson, the creepy Prolethean leader guy. The way Art, you know, really backs her up. It's like, next time I'll bite your head off. Yeah, she'll bite your head off. Don't you mess her. Don't you cross with her. This is my partner. They work like a partnership now. They work like fellow detectives together. And I like that because it actually enhances Sarah's character more too. She's not just this crazy mother trying to protect her child. She's not just this, the wild one. It gets her to kind of show her strengths and have an organized purpose and a path to go on. And so I think they really balance well with each other.
Yeah, I can't wait to see more of them. Mm-hmm. And I want to see Art interact with more clones. I want him to interact with Cosima, with, well, maybe not Allison. I don't think he can handle Allison.
I'd love to see him with Allison.
Oh, yes, but I don't want to break his brain. And I really do feel that out of all of them, even Helena wouldn't be able to break his brain. But Allison? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I just see the looks that Kevin would be giving as he's watching Allison and Donnie go back and forth together. That's...
Yeah, it would be... I thought I could understand what's going on. I thought I had the grasp on everything. I was wrong.
Yeah. So we have Art and Sarah that are looking for their creepy Prolethean mark because that's really their connection, and trying to find Helena. And they find the midwife that was kicked out of the Proletheans. They get a lead. Yep. and go to Finch's farm and are asking about Gracie and Mark. Well, asking about Mark. And he has never seen Mark, but when they mention Gracie, the guy starts talking to him. So they're really on the investigative trail of Mark and Gracie. Because correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think they knew that Mark and Gracie were together.
Yeah, they didn't.
Yeah.
And how can they? The only person who knew was Helena.
Yeah. So now they've got that lead, and they know, which, I mean, come on, a girl with long, wavy red hair. Yeah, she's going to stand out. So that helps the investigation just a little bit. Let's move over a little bit to Mark and Gracie here for a bit. We've got post-burning off of the tattoo.
Ugh. Still can't handle it. Even thinking about it gives me ugh.
So he actually starts confiding in Gracie. And he and Gracie finally consummate their marriage, which was actually, I think, a very sweet moment when he opens up and he's talking about how he never left the army. He was assigned to recover material from her dad. We're free of your people, but not my people. So they're working together to she's helping out her husband. She loves her husband. And when they have that moment, when they actually become intimate, I was happy for Mark to actually have a moment of, I mean, I hate to say, I actually wrote somewhere in my notes, it's like, why am I rooting for them? This episode got me to actually kind of root for Mark and Gracie. And I'm like, why am I rooting for them? They hurt Helena and they're creepy. And why am I doing this? But I'm rooting for you.
First of all, you are rooting for them because Mark is the least creepy of all the Caster clones, which is already, you know, A, slightly surreal, B,
yeah, blowing my mind,
like, really surreal, C, completely whacked, but hey, he's the least creepy one, so you are rooting for them by extension of having, sure, you know, I want to root for somebody. Mark appears to be lesser evil, I suppose.
I guess.
So yeah, plus they wrote it really well, which, by the way, made me incredibly suspicious from the start. Because if we're getting this kind of stuff that's basically designed to make us go, ah, in a slightly creeped out way, then I knew something was going to go wrong. I didn't know it would go wrong in the same episode, because I was convinced next episode, two episodes in, but not now. So, wow.
Yeah.
But still, they wrote it well, and the actors did a really good job. Because while Mark still looks like, clearly, all the other creepy male clones, I liked how different he seemed. And maybe it's because I haven't seen season 2 in a while, because I didn't do the binge watch before the season 3 premiere.
Mm-hmm.
But he also appeared to be slightly less creepy than I remembered him. I don't know why. Maybe it was on purpose. Maybe I just, you know, built him up to be this creepy Prolethean guy, and now he wasn't living up to my exaggerated idea of him. But what the actors did, both of them, because the actress who plays Glenn Gracie really played into this innocent, really naive and sheltered young girl. So her ideas of marriage, of intimacy with her husband, of living her life with her husband and sharing everything, were slightly naive in a way that she presented it. But I felt it fit the character so well. I understood where she came from with every step of the way. It made sense. The progression of her story arc was logical for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I completely forgot that, you know, I'm not supposed to be rooting for them, because their story was so smooth as it progressed.
And it made sense. Her name, by the way, is Zoe de Grand Maison, Zoe of the Grand House there. She really played it well because she was still innocent, which she really is at the beginning, because she's been under the thumb of her dad, even though she's pregnant by her dad, but not really by her dad.
Don't go into that.
Very messed up. She's pregnant by Helena and her dad. But she starts out very innocent, and she does love Mark. And she thinks nothing of the fact that they, you know, went to bed last night, and it's morning, so I'm going to go across the street and just get some breakfast. No big deal. You know, we're married. We can share secrets. We can do this. This is what we're supposed to do. And she has this really nice effect on him. It makes me think, if the other caster clones had somebody that actually had that effect on, they had that connection with, if it would make a difference, because you can see the difference in him when he is crazed about, I have to do this, and I have to protect this, and da-da-da-da-da, and when he actually lets her in and opens up to her, and they have that tender moment, you can see how much he does love her. And the fact that he trusted her first as well, to try her plan first, to get the stuff that her father was storing at Finch's farm.
Yeah.
He didn't have to, but I have a plan, and he let her do the plan, and she went and got it. I love how she stood up to the guy, basically calling him a Judas for asking for his storage fee there.
The problem, Mr. Finch, is your lack of faith in us. We Proletheans make fast friends but fearsome enemies. Shall I disrupt my mother's grief to tell her that you're holding out for your 30 pieces of silver?
You really want your 30 pieces of silver? And that look on his face, you know, because he's doing the whole Judas thing. She brings it back. He's all excited. And it's nothing. It's not until he sees that it's not what he thought he was going for. It wasn't the samples and the slides that should be refrigerated. It's just papers and journals. This isn't what I want. That's when I saw him go back to Castor. Before that, I think he was Mark.
Yeah.
But it's that moment that he switched back into that Castor manicness of having to do things, and decided, okay, well, now we're doing it my way. And he goes out and does, oh, can I tell you, that whole scene, I know it was fingers that he was doing, but I turned away because I just started thinking Misery and Kathy Bates with,
Nope, I was doing stuff on my phone. I did not see it. I knew it was coming, and I decided, nope, thank you very much, I love you guys, but I'm going to skip the torture.
I shall look away now while he's busy torturing her. I love the scene with Gracie praying for her husband in that diner and Sarah seeing her and getting the idea and sitting down and talking with her. That moment when she is like, my husband has no brothers, and Sarah shows her the picture of Seth and Rudy. That look on her face when she realizes her husband is a clone and clones are abominations. And that was, I empathized with her too, because at that moment, her world has been completely turned upside down. I mean, she's carrying a clone's child. She's now married to another clone who has infiltrated what her life was. Her father is dead. You know, everything's broken apart. But she still goes back to the hotel. I thought it was interesting, which, just like we'll see with the hair sample from last week, she goes and she takes that box and hides the box. She knows that something in that box, I think, is important, that it's not worth just leaving out. And so we still have that, which I think we'll probably see Sarah discover at some point.
Hopefully.
And Cosima will be, yay, because I'm sure it'll be like more research or insight or something like that. Yay. Then we have the return, because of the midwife, of creepy Prolethean mother. Because they still have a purpose.
Prolethean.
Yeah, she's just... And she takes charge. So we have what actually is the very end of the episode. We still have more of this episode to talk about. But we have Sarah and Mark confronting each other back at the farm.
I don't care about Elena.
You have to. She's your sister.
You're lying.
I'm your sister, Mark.
You're lying.
We did the science. You're my family.
You would say anything to get your sister back.
Think about it. Castor and Nader. Two donors. Two originals. Siblings.
I think we'll talk more about in the next section.
In a second, yeah.
Yeah. But he just is going all manic and is really upset. And did you tell Gracie this? Did you tell Gracie that I was a clone? Why did you do that? Yeah, and his world is exploding. Well, he doesn't have to worry about that much longer, about what the effect is on his life.
Yeah.
What did you think of creepy Prolethean mom showing up and taking her vengeance out on invading her life and her daughter?
Yeah.
Mrs. Johansson, please.
We shared everything with you, Mark. Our home, our hearts, our daughter. Now you'll answer to us.
Wait, please. I love her.
Not like her mother.
I fully expected Sarah to step in and shoot Mrs. Prolethean in the back at the last possible moment.
Or tackle her or something. Yeah.
Yeah, something. I really expected that when Mrs. Prolethean first shot Mark in the leg and then went after him with a long rifle. You know, rifle with the scope. For sniper things, and it was such a surreal image. But I really, really expected that final shot to be coming from Sarah, who would be killing Mrs. Prolethean, and with that, in a way, earning at least some trust from Mark. Right?
Right.
It seemed like a logical conclusion of that scene. And it would get the plot a step farther, and it would work. So it was obvious. But then it didn't happen. And even though I really do feel like, because we didn't see the body, and we didn't see Mrs. Prolethean actually shoot Mark dead, I will remain cautiously optimistic that maybe Sarah will go in and, I don't know, help him to not bleed out. But at the same time, it seems kind of silly, because you cannot possibly miss from the distance that you were, you know, that they were at. So, yeah, I'm both surprised by that twist and excited, because now that what I expected didn't happen, truly anything can happen. And I don't know where we are going, and I want to find out. So,
yeah,
well done, writers. Well done.
Mark was really a big part of this Prolethean into Caster subplot. I mean, he was the one
exactly
back at the beginning of season two that was chasing Sarah down. She was, you know, he was the one that was part of this whole Helena thing and was the creepy Prolethean, and suddenly he's the Caster that we're empathizing with. And he's the one that holds the clues, hopefully, for Sarah and everybody else, because he would be more empathetic to the sisters, I think, than, which is still saying a lot, than any of the other Caster clones. And the potential is he's either dead or he's probably mortally wounded. So it's up in the air, I think, if Sarah is going to run out and find him dead, or she's going to run out and find him dying and is still able to talk to him. I don't think that Mother missed in a way that he would live. I just don't know yet if she killed him outright or if he is dying. Because I don't think you want to piss off a culty mom like that. I think she knows enough to mortally injure him.
Yeah, but it would make sense that, at least to me and my twisted little black heart, that if she really wanted revenge for some, you know, imaginary slight, what she could do was fire a shot into his gut. That's a messy wound, mm-hmm. and it's painful, and it takes ages. At least, you know, Google tells me so.
And he's out in the middle of a cornfield on a farm that's basically deserted. So it's not like, you know, like he got shot in the stomach in the middle of a busy street and people could help him.
Exactly. So as far as she's concerned, this might be a way to go. Inflict maximum pain for a maximum amount of time and still ensure that in the end he's going to be dead. So that might be a choice that she made, and that will in turn help Sarah maybe save Mark. And oh my god, what is wrong with us if we are rooting for the creepy Prolethean guy to survive?
What is going on? We couldn't wait for Helena to take him out in season two, and now we're like, no, not Mark. One of his last words is, I love her, and you're like, oh, don't shoot him. Wait, what am I doing? Why am I rooting for this? Yeah. Good for you, writers, for making this root for somebody that we, no way in hell would we have rooted for before.
God, next thing you know, he's going to be our favorite clone. And that's mind-blowing and disturbing.
I think he's my most empathetic Caster clone. That's still not saying a whole bunch, but the one I do care for the most. Well, and he gets this big shock, really, at the end of his life, and it's all because of our next clone. Let's kind of move over into Cosima. So we've already talked about her meeting Art via internet, mm-hmm. and she comes over to help deal with Seth's body, because Cosima gets the bright idea that, hey, we've got a specimen right here. I can do some scientific tests on things. And her and Scotty come over. Okay, I call him Scotty. Scott.
Oh, yeah. Here's Scott.
Hey. Hello, Lieutenant Scotty.
Don't call me that.
No, her and Lieutenant like barely Scott. A Trekkie. He only went to Comic-Con once.
And
love it. They're like
Commander.
A brother and sister just fighting. Yeah. It's like, and that's Lieutenant Commander Scott. You know, oh, you are such a cute little geek. I love you. Scott has endeared himself to me a lot because he is just so ding darn cute. Especially while he's watching Cosima do a little dissection work there on Seth in the bathtub.
I loved how Fee kept telling him, you know, it was almost like Fee decided that Scott needs a little sidekick, 101.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not supposed to complain. You're supposed to be supportive. You're supposed to be doing this. What kind of sidekick are you, you know?
Yeah.
Do not fail this. You are Cosima's sidekick and you have certain duties. And do as I do. And stuff like that. Well, it was so hilarious.
Well, and Scott's not a hardened criminal like Fee and Cosima. I just love how both Fee and Cosima are both just like, yeah, whatever. And Scott's like, oh. This scene was the moment that I was like, gee, we need to have a crossover with another show that we podcast on, because this is an East Coast show. We know it's filmed in Toronto. It's this nebulous New York Toronto conglomerate. You know, I think it's supposed to be in the States, which would make sense with a lot of military stuff, because I know it's still Canada, but, you know, us doing military stuff on foreign soil, not so good for foreign relations, even though it's Canada. If we could have a crossover with the West Coast and Seattle, and we could get Liv from iZombie to come there, I just saw the brain. I went, you know, if you just let her have a little taste of that, you could learn so much stuff.
Yeah, all about castor clothes. Because I loved how last week we talked about how leader clones have a physical flaw, biological flaw, and castor clones have a neurological flaw. And right this episode, Cosima arrives at the same conclusion and does what needs to be done. And I love how when Sarah talks to Mark, going a little back for a tiny little second, she says, "We did science." That's basically it. And that was after she hung up on a phone call with Cosima, where Cosima explained in what seemed to me excruciating detail.
It was excruciating.
I didn't understand a word. And it was like, I'm fluent in English, but that wasn't English. So that I could relate to Sarah.
That scene was between Scott and Cosima with Fee there, you know, them going into all the sciencey stuff and looking back and forth and the sequencing and all that and the way they talk. And then they call Sarah. You think, okay, it's between Scott and Cosima. Yeah, they're going to talk geeky because they understand. They've got the science stuff down. When they call Sarah and she's, you know, tiptoeing around in the barn and Scott starts off with all the science talk, and I come from a family of scientists. So, you know, this is not foreign to me to hear the science talk. But first Scott goes into it and then Cosima steps in. Hey, let me take over, Scott. Let me make it clear to her. And she's doing the exact same thing with all these words. I was like, huh?
I don't.
Okay. It's something with the sequencing, because I saw on the computer with all the DNA
and highlighting. Yeah.
Highlighted. It's like, thank you for that. That was the kind of like, if anybody watched the Cosmos series last year with Neil deGrasse Tyson, he would do that. He'd go into like the super science thing and then he'd go, okay, basically for those of you that don't get it, here's the easy version, you know? And I'm like, okay, where's the easy version? I need Neil to step in and dumb it down for me because I don't get it.
That after over two episodes of this, Cosima would catch up on, you know, dumb it down, explaining small words, speak slowly, enunciate if necessary. But no.
Remember last season she had Delphine, and I think that Delphine kind of helped temper her into remembering that. She's now got Scott, who is just going on full out science geek mode.
Yeah.
And is elevating, let's go all sciencey and you won science. This is where we have the revelation, though, which I think we kind of suspected as viewers, but maybe just didn't overtly talk about the fact that Leda clones and Castor clones are not two separate programs. They are sibling clones.
Hello?
Hey, you're not going to believe this, because I don't either.
I just thought with a few hundred matching base pairs, but it's almost half a gigabase.
Not a good time, Kazema.
Tell her about the loci.
Yeah, a dozen short tandem repeat loci in common. That can only mean one thing, Sarah.
In English, I hope.
The boy clones are our brothers.
It was one of those oh my god revelations that wasn't quite so oh my god.
What?
It was not a huge OMG moment. It was just, it was like, aha, okay, and now you know it. That look on Mark's face when Sarah tells him, you know.
Okay, theory time. Or more like wishful thinking time.
Okay.
Because both Leader clones and Caster clones have a really strong family identity.
Mm-hmm.
These are my sisters. They are my brothers. You know, they really strong. It's us and then the outside world. In a way that Leader clones, Sarah, they are sisters. And there are people, more often than not men, allowed into their inner circle. And then outside of that inner circle, you have the world outside. And they are dealing as a group with Diet, with Prolethians. It's us versus them mentality. And mm-hmm. with Caster clones, what we've seen so far, they're also, you know, brothers. Rudy didn't, you know, leave Seth, even, and only killed him because Seth deteriorated so much that he couldn't be taken along for the ride, so to speak. But they also have this strong brother mentality. So it's, even though, you know, they allow people into their inner circle, in a lesser capacity, I feel, because of the army mentality that they've been trained into. But it's also a little of an us and them mentality, even though it's colored by the army and the way they were raised. And still, we don't know as much about them as we do about female clones. But I kept wondering after this episode, after I finished watching it, whether or not if the Caster clones really buy the idea that Leader clones are their sisters, whether or not they will become us, as in the clones, not Leader and Caster separately, but together, versus them, everybody else. And everybody else who's against us or trying to hurt any one of us will be, you know, an enemy of some sort. I don't think they will go there this season, but I would really love seeing that. Because it can either go clones combining the groups together, or male clones and female clones being at odds, because in response to this, you know, revelation of them being basically siblings, they would tighten their own little groups. Like, you know, and not allowed anyone else in. So it would be us versus them with the clones against each other. I don't know.
I think the Caster clones would be less likely to be accepting, mainly because of the way they were raised. Mainly the way I look at Dr. Cody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the majority of them would be raised to be, and the military aspect to be accepting of something that is an outside force, even if it is their family, because their family is there. I think that the Leader clones would be more accepting of that, but it would have to be the right clone, just like Sarah and Kasima and Allison can separate that they're sisters, and Helena, they're sisters, but Rachel is, even though she's a sister, she's not one of the sestras.
She's us.
Yeah, she's biologically a sister, but she's them. She's not an us. Mm. I think the fact that Mark is probably dead or dying, he was probably their best chance of the caster clones we've seen of the Leetas accepting a caster in some way, shape, or form. But I think the Leeta ones would be more open to accepting it. And I think actually Cosima would probably be the most accepting of the Leeta sisters of a caster brother. I think Allison would be the least accepting. Or Helena.
But that's Allison.
Or Helena, because they're abusing her. You know, we know how Helena feels. It's an interesting situation, because like I said, it wasn't this humongous revelation that they're brother and sister, but it's one of those, okay, you've opened that door. Cool. Can't wait to see where
what do you that do with goes. It?
Yeah. You can't go back now. You can't go back. That's really cool. Before we move on, one last little thing I want to bring up on Cosima that I hope is just she's getting better and not she's falling backwards. Did you notice she had her little cough there?
Yes, and it was extremely worrying.
Yes, it was.
And I was holding my fingers crossed so that even, you know, she covered her mouth with her sleeve. And I was praying to everything that's holy that that sleeve doesn't come off as bloodied.
Yeah. Well, and especially since we don't have Kira around. We don't have Kira around for any more stem cell-y type things. She's
off in Croatia. Admiring dragons.
Or she could be in Belfast, in the palace. You never know. Somewhere. Let's go ahead and move on, because, gosh, this is the bad thing when we have a good episode. Sometimes we just really ramble on, because we've got so much good stuff here to talk about. Let's move on to Helena, since we've been talking about these caster clones. And our last caster clone that we are talking with has actually traveled with Paul back to the base, and Helena sees him come back. I love Dr. Cody punching Rudy for killing Seth.
No.
Sorry, Mother. And Paul actually sticking up for him doing his military thing. You know, it was the protocol to put him down. We have we have Rudy going and taunting Helena. You are the ugliest mark yet.
Yes! I loved that. Oh my god. Helena has a way of just saying the right thing at the right time, and then it follows with, you know, taunting Paul. Let's come on in, have a taste of another sister, and I will kill you all.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Helena has not lost her edge, even though she's, you know, singing in the bed, probably to the scorpion. I think she was in her mind, maybe rocking the scorpion to sleep. But we see her, I think knowing that she has her sisters out there and not believing that her sisters did this to her, that Sarah did this to her.
Yeah.
Is giving her this strength, because I see her exhausted, but I still see her having that strength and that drive to fight back against the ugliest mark yet and Paul but be smart about it. She's not trying to battle them. She's not trying to get physical with them. She's plotting and planning her time. And I like seeing that. The thing I thought was interesting in this episode with this whole connection, really, for me, was Paul. And the fact that he's being very army stoic. We do have him saying, we have confirmation from him and Dr. Cody that testing they were doing last week was looking for that glitch, and that glitch doesn't exist in the Leeta clones, at least not with Helena. So this is something that is specific to the caster clones.
Yeah.
And because of this, Paul, he may be running the base, but the director wants him back in Arlington, which means they want him back at the Pentagon. So he's going back to the States and is going to get even more industrial military badass. I don't know. Paul is getting really interesting, because I don't know where he lies. I mean, when he says at the end, I'm sorry that it's come to this, I believe him, but I don't really know what he means. I don't know what he's sorry for, but I believe he is sorry. He's doing, playing it well, I think. I really do.
Here's the thing. It's one thing to be sorry for something you did. And it's another thing to know that if push came to shove, you wouldn't do it again. And in Paul's case, I'm really confident that he would actually do it everything the same all over again.
Pretty much,
so yeah. It's one thing for him to be sorry for it, you know,
mm-hmm.
and another to know that, yep, he would do it again anyway. So, and that makes him an interesting character again, yeah. you know, so bring on more of that.
Because I do believe him, but I really don't know where he lies in all this. I think he has empathy for the clones, both Castor and Leeta. I really do. Because he does seem to stick up for Rudy and for what, you know, Rudy did with Seth and that program. And I believed everything that he did with Sarah and Beth when he was back being the dyad monitor one. But I'm not exactly sure where he completely lies. And yeah, it makes it really interesting what Dylan is being given. Dylan Bruce, what he's being given.
Yeah.
For this, because I don't know where he's going. And when we saw Paul season one, and even when we saw Paul season two, I knew where he was going. And I was so wrong.
Every time I think I know something, I'm wrong.
And I give up. I'm clueless. I'm clueless.
With this show, it feels good to be wrong.
Well,
it really does.
We'll see.
Because
we'll
they see find ways to surprise us over and over again.
We did see that one little scene, and I think you thought last week that it was just a trophy thing, and I'm even more convinced now that it is not, of Cody getting the logbooks from Rudy, which we did see Rudy take the log out of Seth's pocket. So I guess each one of the Castor clones is probably having to keep...
Yeah.
You know, kind of like a food diary, an exercise diary kind of thing, but whatever, a glitch diary.
Which woman have I assaulted today, and what have you accomplished? That is not creepy at all.
And he does give her that little Ziploc baggie with the woman's hair that he and Seth assaulted. So I do think that that has some sort of play in it, and it makes me question Cody all the more.
Well, one of the solutions might be that they're looking for descendants of the original of the originals, basically. I hate using the term the originals because I watch a CW show called The Originals about original vampires, and it messes with my head, so I need to find a different way to refer to the original people who...
Leeta Zero, Castor Zero. Like Patient Zero.
Patient Zero, yeah.
But they weren't patients. The logical... We've got Leeta Zero and Castor Zero.
What they might be looking is for descendants or relatives of those Patient Zero. So that might... And which would explain why they, you know, wrote down her information. If she matches some, you know, criteria, they will be able to find her. So that might be it. I don't know if it is, but hey, have another theory.
I like seeing those little things that I know this means something. I know this means something, but it's not, you know, something that they're shoving close up in the camera with neon arrows pointing down to it. It's something that you could miss or think nothing of. But when you see it, you're like, that's something. That's something. They're doing something. That's something. That's cool. That's something. So I think that's always fun. Something that is not something. Let's move on to Rachel.
Yeah.
Because poor Rachel had this wonderful life and this wonder, what she thought was a wonderful life and identity and power and prestige. And now she's having problems with the cards, although she's making progress, the kind of injury she had. That moment when the doctor basically confirms for her that the topside story is that her plane went down and Rachel Duncan is no more. again, what the heck are these writers doing to me? I had a moment where I went, oh, I'm sorry, Rachel. Wait, no, I'm not sorry. Wait.
No, you are not sorry. We do not like her. Remember that.
Well, you know, like I said, that moment where you're like, oh, this poor woman who just lost her. Oh, no, wait, I don't know. But it does make me sorry in a way because it makes her more dangerous, I think. Because now she's a wild card. She doesn't have the Rachel Duncan that she has to protect anymore. Yeah. And it puts Delphine, I think, into danger because she knows that Delphine is the new her. Everybody else knew Delphine is the new Rachel Duncan. Now Rachel knows that Delphine is the new Rachel Duncan.
Yeah. What I found interesting is that one of the cards that the doctor showed her was the tattoo that the Castor clones have. And her answer was horses.
And it was immediate.
And I was pretty sure that the doctor expected her to say Castor, which would imply she had prior knowledge. You know, she knew something that's now lost to the brain damage. But that immediate answer of horses, where you would expect Castor, I felt it was important. And we need to, you know, put a pin in this or open a tab in Chrome about this, because this will come back to bite us.
I didn't think that she should answer Castor. I was fine with horses because she still has had brain damage. To me, it was the immediacy, because everything else she struggled for. The star, I forget what the first one was. The key that she said, knife. Each time she's like, knife. Close, it's a key. He held that one up and she went horses immediately. There was no struggling. It was instant recognition and instant answer. And for what little I do know, when you have brain injuries like that and you're getting to it, something that immediate does have that strong super connection. And I think it goes into the doctor, again, one little line saying that Rachel Duncan may be dead and Delphine may be the new Rachel Duncan, but the doctor says that Rachel is still valuable. That's why he's there. He's helping her and he's trying to go through these cognition things. The fact that she answered so fast. Oh, that's going to be a good story.
Yeah, so let's put a pin in this.
We're putting a pin in that one. Something we cannot put a pin in is Allison.
Oh, no. Allison cannot be pinned down in any way or form.
Unless she wants to be. But that's private between her and Donnie. We won't go into that.
Yeah, I don't think their dynamic works like that.
No,
I
don't think so.
If anyone's pinned down, it's not Allison.
Yeah, Donnie would be the one pinned. The way that we still have Allison in this story, but she really isn't involved in any of the Castorness at all. Makes me think she's going to have a really big cast or something coming up at the end, because we are keeping her so alive and vital and interesting and funny. I love her and Donnie pushing around their little cart of soap plus and trying to talk to all the moms and things. That is such I just love that the homemade soap, them pushing around, say no to bullies, both on the schoolyard and on the school board or whatever it was. Donnie is so gleefully enjoying this. Allison is on the top of her game, even when they get cut down by that one mom. And then they show her the soap. This is special soap, and pull her in and, oh, no, 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 the price has gone up. We bought Ramon's business, but you're not getting the kids' prices. This is our prices.
Yeah.
And sucking people in and having people come to their door and looking for this soap.
Allison!
Hi!
Heard about your new business.
Yeah.
Can we maybe get some soap?
Yes, we actually have a special for new customers.
Beautiful.
Free sample?
Brilliant.
Sure.
And really well played on the character's part. I'm not talking about the actor's play.
Because we already love Tatiana and Kristen. We already love them.
Yeah, they are both brilliant, but the way the characters went with this, when that one mom decided, you know, reached into her pocket to pay them, and Donnie was immediately there showing her the leaflet so that she could, you know, pass the money to him without anyone noticing it. It was just, that's good work. Good work, well, guys. I Donnie see a future is... for you in the drug business.
Well, Donnie loved that. Ellen, we should have been drug dealers all along. Pharmaceutical representatives, whatever she said. But he is gleeful in this, which I think makes it even funnier when Marcy comes in and he's like stumbling. Uh-oh. We're in the garage. Leaky is right under our feet. We're making soap to hide the drugs. You know, and it's like, what do you want to be with fumes and lard? And he gets so, when he gets off track, it's so beautifully off track. I just love the way Kristen plays this at the Brune. Make sure you follow him. He's a perfect foil for Allison. I love the two of them together. And I think the way they're working as a partnership is making Allison stronger and stronger. Like what happened to her in Blood Ties, the musical, when her world exploded, that's not going to happen again.
Nope. But did you love it as much as I did when, after the confrontation with Marcy, Allison's line was, I need to cut something.
Do you seriously think that people are going to trust their children to an infamous alcoholic?
Why not? They trusted a conniving, second-rate realtor.
May the best woman win, Allison.
Goodbye, Marcy.
Yes.
It was so deliciously Allison, but at the same time, it passed on the message. I am thinking violent thoughts.
Yeah.
And I need to cut something.
She's just... because Marcy comes in and wants to sell her this house in another school district. And Allison's like, we're not going there. I don't even think so. Back it off, woman. It's something I think is... I don't think that Allison and Donnie provide the comic relief, even though it is this comic touch to it. I love having them in here doing the stuff because it's quote-unquote real life outside of all the clone drama. Mm-hmm. That life is going on. That, this is not... the whole world is not stopping because of Castor and Lita. There are things that are going on. And I think that is important to show to balance it out because it doesn't make the show this constant roller coaster ride and fun house with things popping out everywhere. I think it helps balance the show to have that normal life that's not quite so normal.
Allison is what we need every episode.
I just love her. And like I said, I think it's important now that Allison and Donnie are a team because they make each other better. And he is, without him, I don't think she could be as gloriously Allison as she is.
Yeah, she would, probably.
She'd go back to that. Because notice, when she didn't have Donnie, that's when the alcohol became her support system, her crutch, which ended up, totally destroying everything. It's like Donnie totally gets who Allison is and loves her for it. And I think that's
the reason why she married him.
Yeah.
So, and it's
nice seeing that. It's really nice seeing that he totally gets her, accepts her, and loves all of her quirks and things. And that's what she needs. And I think she probably hasn't had that her life because she is so undescribably off kilter that if she doesn't have, people probably haven't supported her or liked her for who she is her whole life. That's when she had to put on the facade of various things. Donnie does. And that's what I think helps give her the strength that she can be 100% loved for who she is by someone who's choosing to be there. I think, she's got the support from the sisters, but that's her family. Donnie is there because he wants to be there and she wants him there. And I'm really glad that they found a way to expand those relationships and make him integral, even though he's doing the bully lines and the drug dealer lines and I think he's really important.
Yeah. And we will see more of them. That's for sure.
Oh, yes. Yes. And I want to know where I can get some of that soap. Because, you know, handmade soap. That's...
Yeah, but I don't think you'll be able to get the soap with the extras.
No, that's okay. So... I don't need the extras. But I wouldn't mind some of this. She's got to sell some just regular soap. You got to have the cover. It can't all be Soap Plus. I wonder what her business name's going to be. She's got to have a name. Well, let's see what kind of name they have. I think that's pretty much it for this episode. Except for two small things. It's time to pick our clone queen for the episode.
Three cheers for Her Majesty the Queen! Hip hip! Hip hip! Hip hip!
Okay, Alex.
You go first.
Oh, you want me to go first? Okay.
Yes.
My clone queen for this episode is Cosima. She didn't have huge amounts of screen time, but she seemed back to the Cosima that we know and love. She's not brooding. She's not sad and upset. She's not sick. We hope, fingers crossed, that cough was just a recovery cough.
Yeah, yeah.
Watching her be in her full glory of science, you know, you've won science, was so refreshing to see. And for her to come up, discover the connection between Castor and Leda, she just changed the game. And she did it doing what she does best, being cool Cosima, the science chick. And this is the Cosima that I've been waiting to have come back after last season, you know, when she was the one everyone was taking care of. This is the Cosima I know and love, and she just changed the entire episode for me with her revelations and everything. So Cosima's my clone queen.
Ah, nice one. And when it comes to my clone queen, I don't think I'll be surprising anyone by saying Allison.
2 weeks in a row!
Yeah, I am really, really enjoying her storyline. And what we're being given and the delivery and everything surrounding Allison. Allison's just on fire! I am really enjoying her. I'm looking forward to her storyline, to seeing her, you know, weeds spin off into, you know, prescription drugs. I am completely in love. So Allison grabs second week in a row, the trophy of Clone Queen.
That's incredible, because there was a time when I don't think you ever would have picked Allison.
She's grown on me, you know, fungus and all.
You just want the soap.
Yes.
And the oranges, because she cut up the oranges in the season. Little snack. You need a snack. You need some. Let's go ahead and pick our backup for the week.
I just need you to be my backup, okay?
I don't do backup. I don't even know what backup is.
So am I going first on this one, too?
Oh, yeah.
My backup for this week, I don't think should be much of a surprise with the way I gushed over him at the beginning of the episode, is Art. I think he really stood out. I think he was there to support all the Sestras. He is now a part of the Clone Club. I mean, full card-carrying member. Not just that temporary permit that you can come to the parties. He actually has everything. And he was able to add a dimension to his character that's just kind of been there for 2 seasons. He added a dimension that I thought was really important. And this episode was probably the best I've ever seen Art. So for me, backup is Art.
Nice. I thought about giving backup to Art because he really pushed all the emotional buttons for me. But in the end, I decided to give this trophy to Fee, who completely won me over by holding his very own workshop of Sidekicks 101. And I feel every sidekick from every show should attend Fee's Sidekicking 101. At least for a semester. It should be an obligatory course, you know, something you had to pass to be considered a proper sidekick. Because just his scenes with Scott, in a way, they fit with my enjoyment of Allison's scenes. They were this lighthearted exchanges in the really serious emotional episode, which is why I'm giving it to Fee. Plus, I promised myself that I would give at least one backup to Fee after slighting him last season so many times. So yes, it's Allison and Fee for me.
Especially since the first time we did mentioning doing the backup, you're like, why are we doing that? Because it's always going to be Fee. I'm like, well, you never know. It could be something different. So.
Which is why I feel like he deserves it. Because he's been snubbed as many times as Tatiana in the award shows. So yes, this one goes to Fee.
That is a tough one there, because she has been snubbed a lot. And he can bring the drinks. I mean, that is a nice thing about...
I never say no to drinks.
I would never say no to
drinks. I don't even need a body. Keep the body. I'll keep the drinks.
That will do it for this episode of Orphan Black on Sci-Fi for Chicks. Please come back and join us next week for episode 4, Newer Elements of Our Defense. I won't go into what the quote is now, because Alex will just go to sleep as I do that. We will be back to talk more Orphan Black and the wonders that is this entire cast, that we're loving everybody, and they're making us like characters that we were never supposed to like, that we were supposed to hate forever and or not care about forever.
It's disturbing.
What are they doing? It's just really crazy. Make sure that you subscribe to us on iTunes or the podcast platform of your choice so you don't miss a single episode of Orphan Black or iZombie or our finale of Gotham, because that is ending very, 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 very soon. Very soon.
Yay. Like in 2 days.
Also go over to scififorme.com and follow and like them so you can make sure that you see things like the reviews of Outlander that Alex and Leslie are doing. That's another great show over on Stars with a totally fictionalized account of a man. Follow us on Twitter at SciFiForChicks, and we'd love to hear who your clone queen and backup would be for this episode. You can let us know on Twitter, email scififorchicks@scififorme.com, or on our hotline 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-FI. Thank you so much, Alex, for talking Lita clone, Caster clone.
All the clones.
Mayhem, all the clones. The great big clone family. I feel like the Pointer Sisters now with the whole We Are Family. You know, they're going to all get together. That'll be part of the musical. That'll be the next musical episode of Orphan Black.
We Are Family.
Yeah, the casters and the Litas get together. You know, that would be hilarious. Yeah. We will see you next week. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
This is a fight for knowledge. This is war.
Arias Tenajbi.
Those with power do not give it up easily.
They never have.
And they never will.
I am not your weapon.
I am not your toy.
I am not your experiment.
I'm not your property.
This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.